The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. Yes, it does. How you doing this morning, everybody? And it is the day before Memorial Day, and we certainly are honored to have Frank Rose in the studio here. He's listening out here, our Sergeant of Arms. Thank you, Frankie. We love you, and thank you for your service, and thank all you veterans out there for your service. This is Jefferson State of Mind. This is Terry Raposa at KCNR 1460 AM, where you can usually get it, and 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better. This is your talk radio from downtown Reading, KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com. Again, we want to remember all those who sacrificed everything for their country. And in comes my partner, Wynn Carpenter. How you doing, buddy? Doing good.
We're not on FM right now.
Oh, we're not on FM?
No.
So the music doesn't sound better?
Nothing sounds at all. At all. We're off as usual.
Okay. Anyway, so did you have a little traffic problem?
Yeah, we had a little problem this morning.
Yeah, I can imagine. Usually a pipe burst or something.
No. Nothing like that.
Nothing like that. So anyway, this morning we'll be expecting a call from Anthony Tramino. He is running for governor for the state of California. I was contacted by his campaign manager, and apparently he's having a little trouble with the telephones where he is right now, so we'll see how that works out.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we also, in the second half hour, are going to be talking with Rich Gallardo a bit. We'll be talking about some of the issues here locally, which I think is very, very important. But, you know, I think that any time you have a situation where you have getting a note here, and our note is...
Yeah, they all know that.
What's that?
That AM's optional. We go through this all the time. This is nothing new after 9 years of being on here.
Last couple of weeks have been interesting here, that's for sure. So anyway, basically Anthony again is trying to find a way to communicate with us. He's down in Southern California at an event. So in lieu of that... I did want to bring up a couple of things. First of all, I think that a lot of times when there are candidates for candidate questions, I think the main thing is to hear a solution. And a lot of times when you have any kind of, many of the candidates like to speak in platitudes. It's not so much about, you know, what the solution is. And one thing I think that was really well done was by Chris Kellstrom, who's running for District 5 supervisor. In his ads, he actually takes a 30-second ad, and he actually talks about solutions to a problem. He talks about the permit process and how he could help that in Shasta County with a receipt and a report on how people were handled. He talks about the fire ordinance that he'd like to have in the county that would make it so that BLM-managed land in the county would hold them more responsible. We could hold them more responsible in the county to make sure they're cleaning away all that debris. And another thing he talked about was using that $38 to $40 million right off the get-go for a new jail rather than doing the Johnson Wheel.
Now, going back to the second one you just mentioned, just to remind everybody, the BLM land that is being managed, or the land being managed by BLM, is at the service of the county because it's county property.
That's right.
It's the sovereign citizen's property of the county of Shasta within the borders of Shasta. Why do we not fire BLM, and take care of it ourselves. Why has not one board of supervisors throughout the entire state not taken that on? I don't understand it. It boggles my mind. If it's truly property within the county, they are the executive and legislative body of the county, and they should be able to do whatever is necessary and whatever it takes to get that under control. Because what happens is it's burning up not just through fires. We're not just burning that land. We're burning people's land, then the neighboring parcels, and it filtrates into town. Hell, we just had that a couple years ago when – you know, the fire came roaring through Reading and burned 1,100 homes or however many there were.
Oh, yeah.
And then every year there's something out there in the rural areas where the BLM managed lands are, neighboring parcels that people own and they pay taxes on and they live in. How can we not do that, especially if those properties are cleaned up? You know, a lot of the people are cleaning up their properties to make them more fire resistant, not free from fire, but they're trying to make it safer for themselves and for the neighboring properties. How come we can't fire, we being the Board of Supervisors and the people that elect them in, why can they not be fired from the, I'm talking about the BLM, being fired from managing our properties? Because they're the ones with ultimate control saying that we can do and what we can't do with the property within our county. And it's not everywhere in the country. It's mostly from the Midwest westward, because that's what happened when the feds got involved. You go back east, how many BLM lands are managed back there? Probably very little. So it's just a question I ask, and I absolutely support that, what Chris says. I absolutely support it.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think, again, the bottom line is that he's offering solutions.
And, right, right.
The ordinance would force them into doing their job is what it amounts to. So, you know, you could fire them, but if you can have an ordinance that forces them into doing what they're supposed to be doing anyway, as a watchdog and as something that's on the books, as a legal item, then you have something that's a little more, has some teeth. So it may be the first option. Maybe the second option is to fire them. So, you know, the real deal is that the solutions that he comes up with are coming, comes up with them in 30 seconds. It's not a matter of we have to answer a question in a long way or platitudes or anything like that. But I think I'll give Mr. Tremino maybe another 5 minutes, and then we'll just get into the program. We've had this thing scheduled for around 3 weeks, so.
Who knows what's happened?
Who knows what happened? Anyway, so I know the other gubernatorial candidates we've had on were prompt, called in right on time. And so, you know, I guess it just is what it is. But, you know, if you plan something, I think, you know, and you're planning it out weeks ahead, you should be prepared for it and not 5 minutes before a program starts, figure out you may not be able to have a line to call in on.
Yeah.
I hope that's not a reflection on a job that someone would do. Anyway, so we're just going to get into our program. It's a quarter after here, so we're going to get into it. Basically, I think one of the things we need to be talking about right now, and we'll go into this, if Anthony does call, we'll give him a little time here, but in the interim, I think it's important to understand what's been going on with the Sheriff's Department. The January 18th issue was something that was really a bit staggering. As most people know, on January the 18th, there was a meeting at the Board of Supervisors that was done outside because the key cards of Les Baugh and of Patrick Jones, those two key cards were disabled by Matt Pontes. So those were disabled so they couldn't get inside the building. So a TV was brought out to the front of the building, and the virtual meeting from the Board of Supervisors commenced. The supervisors were in fear, three of the supervisors were in fear of some sort of aggression from different people who had been threatening them, according to what the sheriff said and what they had said.
But were any of those people in attendance?
No, and I'm going to get to that. So they stayed home. So anyway, basically, the situation was is that, you know, I did have a chat with Mike Johnson, who's our interim sheriff and running for sheriff, and basically, you know, I had three questions. First of all, there was a SWAT team that was on Butte and West Street, right over there in the parking lot. Why were they there? Now, there were people out in front of the building. watching this TV, 70% of which were women and children. There was no deputy sheriff in the front of that building. It's the only supervisor's meeting I've ever seen in 45 years where there wasn't any sheriff, deputy sheriff,
law enforcement
yeah. there, because basically isn't that a way to deter something that would happen? Instead, the sheriff put a SWAT team, had a drone that was flying above and plainclothes police across the street. The only type of security there was one gentleman who had to be, he was elderly to say the least, one gentleman. This allowed some people to come in, Pinkney and the crew,
yep.
come in and harass people, shout remarks at them. At one point, there were two middle-aged ladies that were standing there, and they just were tired of being, basically
verbally
hearing
abused.
Cussing and yeah. verbally abused, so they asked me to stand with them, which I did. There was one particular gentleman whose wife was called the C word. He did not respond, to his credit. And again, it was mostly women and children.
Well, he didn't know about it until well after it happened.
Yeah, he didn't know.
Yeah.
But, so here's the deal. But the point is that all this is going on. Why would you spend all that money for a SWAT team? Why would you spend all that money for a drone? And then the best part is that, Marty Reed, actually asked the question and actually has written a wonderful article on this. He asked some questions of the sheriff's department. First of all, did the sheriff's office have a drone overhead of the crowd outside the chambers on that date, or did they use another agency's drone? Did the sheriff's office have plainclothes officers outside the meeting? How many? For what purpose? Did the sheriff's office have a team waiting a few blocks away? What was the purpose of the team? So the response he got was from Miss Ash, who is the agency staff services analyst. Okay, her response was this. In response to your request for records, please be advised that the sheriff's office has no records. We understand to be responsive to your request. Please note the county is under no legal obligation to respond to the questions. And then she cites a couple of different cases. However, as a courtesy, the sheriff's office has decided to provide you with the answers. The sheriff's office does not use a drone in its operations. That wasn't the question. The question was there a drone on January the 18th? Specifically, no drone was used on January 18th. Okay, overhead the crowds outside that chamber. The sheriff's office did not have plainclothes officers outside the Board of Supervisors chambers on January 18th. 2022. Finally, the sheriff's office did not have a team waiting a few blocks away from the Board of Supervisors chambers on January the 18th. That was the answer. Well, gee whiz. When I had a talk with Sheriff Johnson, he admitted to all those things happening because it was, we have pictures. We have pictures. We have proof. We have eyewitnesses that saw the SWAT team. Everyone saw that. So what happens is on May the 25th, Johnson replies to Mr. Reed, on May the 24th, 2022, I was made aware of this Public Records Act. So this lady, Miss Ash, must have done this without his knowledge. And he just got wind of all this, although he had been questioned outside the Board of Supervisors. Mm-hmm. He had been talked to by a zillion people about it, but just getting wind of it. I was made aware of the Public Records Act request submitted in regard to the Shasta County's office operation relative to the County Board of Supervisors' January 18, 2022 meeting. Upon reading the PRA response, I found it to be inaccurate. No, you found it to be inaccurate and in direct conflict with the facts. Okay, so there's a request going into the sheriff's department, and the sheriff's admitting that the answer was not accurate because it was in conflict with the facts. I have consistently related to persons on at least two prior occasions that we did have personnel staged nearby, others personnel patrolling the surrounding areas. So the response from the sheriff's department, from Ms. Ash, was inaccurate, or could you just say it wasn't the truth? Well, probably inaccurate. Should we use that term, do you think?
Yeah.
Okay. The accurate information to your PRA request. The response contains the facts and should supersede prior response sent. Prior to the January 18, 2022 supervisors meeting, The Shasta County Sheriff's Office, along with other allied agencies, wonder who that is, had been made aware of several general specific threats to the supervisors. The threats were social media based upon unknown persons. The Anderson Police Department was pushing for an investigation into more serious threats to Les Baugh. Supervisors and other members of the public had related fear for their safety due to these threats. Well, if they related fear and they were at home, why didn't the Sheriff's Department have a presence on January 18th out in front? Who was in fear?
At the very least, they should have doubled down on the amount of sheriff deputies that typically are at a meeting.
I asked him, why didn't you do that? It's the first time in history we haven't had a sheriff deputy. And wouldn't the sheriff deputy have deterred?
By doubling down, I mean they would have two.
Yes.
Because typically they have one.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't they double down and have
two? Or just
two?
Have one.
Or just have one. But
actually,
why didn't they have two by doubling
down?
Actually,
of late, they have had two. For a long time, they've had two inside the chambers. They had two inside the chambers when nobody was allowed to go in.
That's right.
And now he's saying that, why didn't you send them out there? Well, basically, after a conversation, the sheriff said, well, that's my mistake. Well, that's a pretty big mistake. Wouldn't a sheriff deputy be a deterrent to all the intimidation, all the cussing, all the belittling and badgering of the people there? Are you serious?
Full-on harassment. And
unbelievable.
I have a question, though. How did their debriefing go after that event occurred?
Oh, you mean as far as
the sheriff's deputies?
The sheriff's deputies.
Yeah, and the sheriff and the allied agencies. How did their debriefing go? Because that would be interesting to hear. They're having debriefing about something that didn't happen? Is that what they're saying?
Yeah. Well, okay, yeah. I guess that's what they're saying. Because upon learning that Supervisor Patrick Jones would be holding his portion of the virtual meeting outside the Board of Chambers, the Shasta County Sheriff's Office devised an operational contingency in interest of public safety. In interest of public safety would have been a deterrent to anything that would cause the public not to be safe, especially when 70% were women and children.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Yep.
Supervisors and other members of the public have related their fear due to these threats. Well, if the public's afraid, again, why didn't you have sheriff deputies there? The safety concerns were not based on the crowd that would be gathering for the meeting, as we have not experienced any violence or criminal activity from the participants at board meetings. So the people there were not going to cause a problem, but you weren't going to have anybody there to make sure that no other problems were caused, but a SWAT team around the corner. So to me, this enhanced, in my opinion, this could have enhanced an absolute incentive to cause some sort of disturbance because there was no deterrent.
Well, the
horrible by the sheriff. Horrible.
The players that were disturbing and doing all the harassment have been typical in the board meetings that they do show up. When they do speak, they flip off the crowd, and which is all recorded.
Yes.
All that's documented via recording. And video, audio, you get it, it's all recorded because not only does the Board of Supervisors have a recorded audio and video there, but also the TV stations, they have that, and so do other groups that are all in there, all different forms of media. And, you know, the media that is actually reporting stuff, you know, like the Shasta County Citizens Journal is reporting, and their players that are always doing that as well. So, and people that we know that are working with, you know, others, they're all recording this, so it's all there. So why would they not have some form of, like you said, deterrent there by doubling down by having maybe two sheriff's deputies?
Why not just the normal procedure?
Normal procedure.
Okay, so let me just finish this up. Okay, so since there was an unknown number of people gathering on the outside of the less controlled environment, and because of the anxiety looming, we had real concerns for public safety. Again, but you never had the officers there, first time in history. Therefore, our operational public safety plan included staging of additional personnel, which Ms. Ash denies in her response to Mr. Reed, and other personnel patrolling the area. While the Shasta County Sheriff's Office currently does not have a drone, we we do request the deployment of the UAVs occasionally. So they did have a drone, and again, what did Ms. Ash say? There was no drone. I'll be looking into our process of responding to PRA requests. It is apparent there is a need to change, modify, revamping, avoid such errors in the future. No kidding. My goal to our agency is to be transparent and honest in all information that is lawfully discoverable. Again, we apologize for our failure in this endeavor. So you apologize for sending back false information. Here's the best part. It's signed Michael Johnson, and then the best part is Janaea Ash also signs it. And Janaea Ash is the person who probably, I would say, has quite a bit of communication with the sheriff. But for him to write and honestly say he didn't know anything about it until May the 24th, I know he knew something about it because he and I had talked about it. And again, oh, I made a mistake. I didn't have deputies here. Without having deputies there or any presence at all, as my friend Rich Gallardo is going to say in a minute, and Rich, you made a good point. Welcome, by the way, my friend.
Hello.
Good point you made the other day. You said the role of the Sheriff's Department should be to deter crime before it happens. Isn't that correct?
Crime prevention, yes.
And that never happened.
That happened. That letter is dated 4 months after the event.
Yeah, and he had...
Four months.
I mean, unbelievable. Well, I must have made a mistake. How can you make a mistake?
One-third of a year. One-third of a year.
Unbelievable.
One-third of a year. Why did that take so long for that to come out? Again, it goes back to, they had a debriefing, didn't they? They talked about that. That would be part of their record that they would have there. And if Mr. Reed was asking for California public record, you know, through either a FOIA or a CPRA request, why was that not shared truthfully? And that's the problem that we're having. Those are the things that we are asking about. It's a basic thing. We just want the truth. All we want is the truth.
I got to read this. This is the response I got from a former officer that is in Johnson's camp. The sheriff made a mature deployment decision based upon law enforcement protocols and keeping the community safe. No, he didn't, because there was no deterrent there for the inciting of a riot. He also, I think, did an appropriate job balancing keeping the community safe while not inserting law enforcement into the situation further that could have inflamed people. Really? How in the world does that even work again? As my friend Rich is going to explain, the role of the Sheriff's Department at these meetings, even Rich, when there's nobody in the building and just the supervisors are there, there's two deputies. And yet he thinks it's safer. This ex-law enforcement officer is saying that was a proper way to do it. Unbelievable. What say you, sir?
Absolutely not. And where were the private security guards? Remember, we pay Securitas almost $1 million a year to protect county facilities, and they're usually there at the county board meetings. Where were they?
They had one person, and the gentleman was elderly.
Thank you.
I'm elderly, but he was
older,
more elderly.
Yeah.
And so you look at this, and this same person is trying to say that Mr. Reed in his article, which is brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and I know, Rich, that you work with Marty on some of these things, and you guys have given some good, brilliant, factual situations. Fact is, this was not a deterrent. Fact is, it was extremely terrible discernment by the sheriff. Fact is, there was no one there to protect those women and children. And you've got something too, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah, so, the crime prevention side of this house, you know, I'm retired law enforcement, military, and, you know, somehow that doesn't get talked about publicly a whole lot. Mm-hmm. Once in a while you'll hear something, RPD or sheriff's office, I mean, but... You know, crime prevention,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's always respond versus prevent.
Right.
And we really need to get back to the prevention.
And we're going to get to all of that. And we're going to keep Rich with us here for the second half hour. We're going to go off for our first break.
Only break.
Time has come.
For 51.
Maybe FM will get done. Oh, wait a second.
PG&E's
there
down.
There is no FM. PG&E's working on it.
PG&E's down.
They are.
Yeah.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
I was just out of the service, thumbing through the classifieds, when an ad that said old Chevy somehow caught my eye. The lady didn't know the year or even if it ran, but I had that $1,000 in my hand. It was way back in the corner of this old ramshackle.
KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com. Join Sue McClain weekday mornings from 6 to 7 for the Sue McClain News Hour, where you'll hear the up-to-the-minute local news, national and international news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Followed by Free Fire Radio from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bott. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, equal opportunity critics. From noon to 3, learn how to get out of debt with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday nights, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal, local history, North State Now, and unsung heroes of our area. From 7 to 9, tune in to Ben Shapiro, your local downtown radio station, KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
The pandemic has taken a toll on our country.
The Dow plunging hundreds of points, its worst showing of the year.
A shaky economy, financial strain, all made worse by politicians trying to take advantage.
California, New York, a lot of the blue states where businesses are really struggling to find people. And so what can they do?
Homelessness, rising crime, constitutional rights infringed upon by shutting down schools, churches, and small businesses.
There's a lot going on in the economy. There's a lot of uncertainty at the kitchen table.
Now is the time to stand up for community. Now is the time to move people forward.
I'm Kevin Cry. I'm not a politician. I'm a lifelong Shasta resident, and I don't recognize what our community has become. I'm running to lead with backbone. I'll prioritize public safety and make our community more affordable.
Our local leaders have let us down. We can do better.
Let's bring the North State back.
Paid for by committee to elect Kevin Cry, Shasta County Supervisor, District 1.
We're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260. Or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
Until it's your time, I guess heaven was needing a hero. Stand up for what you believe and follow it through.
That would sound really good if the FM was working.
Well, you know, the thing is, we do want to thank all our veterans, and thank you, Rich. Thank you, Frankie Rose, one of our treasures here. Dick Wilkinson, Commander Gibson, all of you guys, amazing, amazing people.
And pay homage to all those who served and perished while they were serving.
Absolutely.
That's what the weekend is all about.
Correct, correct.
And Frankie, don't you worry about those Steelers. I think they're going to be fine, buddy. Anyway, we're here with Rich Gallardo, and we are talking about the word discernment, and should I dare say corruption in maybe untruths? Anyway, yeah. It's up to you, buddy.
This is a target-rich environment right now in Shasta County. I'll tell you what. So regarding the illegal land sale, and I can say that because the judge has determined it as
the
illegal.
Oh, you're talking about for the
city of Reading? Did you want me to talk about something else?
I just wanted you to finish up the other part, but no, if you want to go into the land sale, that's fine too. But I think maybe we're sort of done with the Johnson thing at this point.
I think so until we get some new information. that was plenty.
In a half an hour from now.
That was plenty. Yeah.
Anyway, you're going to talk about the land deal and the obstruction of the move. Alleged obstruction, yeah. Or is it alleged anymore?
No, a judge has ruled on this matter, so it is now adjudicated. I'm not sure if the city will appeal or not. So the May 17th local judge, Superior Court Judge Wood, she ruled that many violations, state code violations, Reading City policy violations, were committed by the city regarding the small 0.4-acre piece of land on Bocelli. And so there's just so much going on here. So after reading that roughly 18-page ruling, I had an idea. I was like, well, now that the court case is done, all the documents that were in that case should now be available as public record. So I did a records act with the city attorney's office last Tuesday. The very following day, they had it ready for me, 1,100 pages. In one day, fastest records act request ever. So my understanding, my belief is that this is probably the same document package that the city had to give to the Wind River Tribe when they sued, because it was already prepared and ready. So likely I got the same document package that the Wind River attorneys got. So, which was good. I got what I asked for, which was the communications part of the illegal land deal, emails, etc. So I got that, obviously, also. And I've since gone through all 1,100 pages, and thank you, Martin, for converting that to a searchable document that really made things quite a bit faster.
Did you have to pay for that?
$6 for the thumb drive. They just gave me a thumb drive, so yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm not worried about $6.
So bottom line is it did the city council know about this alleged illegal activity?
Well, the city council was in fact involved in this land deal, and I've done a story on this on Shasta County Citizen Journalist. I've done a story on this about a week and a half ago, where I detailed several Brown Act government code sections, and the big one here's the big one here. The city makes it a habit to do closed session land negotiations prior to an open session announcement on that very same land deal negotiation. If they had reversed those, the law requires that there be an open session, open and public, meaning it's not consent. It has to be an open and public agenda item. If they had reversed that, they would be in a lot less trouble than they are. Still in trouble, but they would be in a lot less trouble than they are. Because now that they violated the Brown Act, on multiple occasions, by the way, regarding land deals, these can be nullified and voided through a court action. Whether it be a civil or criminal court action.
The transaction could be nullified.
The transaction, anything according to the Brown Act, any closed session violation, if it's found to be a violation by a court action, can be nullified and voided.
Okay.
And these land deals, this one especially, but there's others, it's already been adjudicated that it was in violation. Now, unfortunately, the Wind River lawyer did not specifically go after the Brown Act violations. Although when you read the 18-page document from Judge Wood, the contents of those violations are in there. It's right there. It is, bam, there it is. But they did not specifically go after and charge Brown Act violations, which is unfortunate.
Can that so if they decide to, the court decides to reverse it and make that go back to the way it was, can they do that in less than 11 days like they did when they moved it forward? With the title change and the money exchange and all that? Can that be done in less than 11 days?
Wheels of justice.
I'm suspicious as to why the Wind River attorney did not go after Brown Act violations. I'm highly suspicious of that. I have since found, since last week, the City of Reading policy regarding land negotiations. And it's policy 1901, and you can find it on the City of Reading website. Just do policy 1901, and a four-page document talking about how they can sell city property. And one of the things that's in there, and I disagree with this, by the way, one of the things that's in there is that they don't have to open up their city property that they want to sell. Mm-hmm. They do not have to open it up for public auction. And I highly disagree with that, obviously. I'm still researching the California government code and regulations to see if this is even accurate. Because just because a policy says something doesn't mean it is following the law.
Policy is not law.
Exactly. So I'm still researching that, and as soon as I find out, I'll obviously report on that. But they can do an auction, they can do a negotiated sale, they can do an exchange, a lease, or a RFP, request for proposal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I just have a problem with the city selling, any government entity selling a piece of public land without putting it out for public auction.
Well, here's the thing, right. and the motivation was to stop the casino. But
yes.
the thing is that there are certain city council members. I think Winters was on it then. I think
Winters, Schrader, and Aaron Reznor.
Aaron Reznor. Okay. Yep. There was one email I saw that even had a response from her.
Mm-hmm. So
very interesting. And so she knew, obviously.
Right, and this is the crux of the problem, again, is for the land negotiation part of it. Another thing that the city can actually, the Brown Act allows the legislators, which in this case would be the city council mm-hmm. people, they can actually be the negotiators. Okay?
Right.
The law allows them to be the negotiators. Typically, they don't do that for conflict of interest. Usually, they'll assign it to the public works director, city manager, whoever. And in this case, they didn't. And again, they started in closed session. And they were doing directions. So another one of the Brown Act laws says that if they do any kind of collective action, collective discussions, collective this, collective that, in a closed session, that it's in the Brown Act, that can be determined reportable action. Yet every one of these closed sessions regarding this a particular land deal, when they came out of closed session, they reported, quote-unquote, no reportable action. On at least four of these, they said no reportable action. But the emails that you have seen and that are now out shows that the city council had collective discussion and direction to the city manager and the city attorney regarding this land deal. So so either Tippin is lying, saying that the city council directed him, which I don't think he's lying. Right?
Yeah, okay.
There's only two options.
Well, it's right.
Either they
email.
Did it because he said they did it in his email, or he's lying, which I doubt that's the case.
Right.
So they absolutely directed it. Again, it's not a problem for them directing the land sale. They have to have the open public session first, which identifies the negotiators, by the way. The law says they shall identify the negotiators on a land deal. Okay? And they never did that. They never had the open public where they identified the negotiators. They went right into closed session. So again, it's what a mess.
Yeah. We do have a caller on the line. Jim, how are you today?
Hey, Terry, what's going on, brother?
Oh,
Jimmy. What's up?
Awesome. How you doing, Jimmy? What's going on?
I'm doing good. I just want to make a quick comment about Aaron Reznor. And I remember back during the lockdowns, she was on the city council, and she kept her coffee stand open because it was an essential business. Am I correct?
Yes.
Now, that is kind of weird because most people have a coffee maker in their house. And why would you keep a coffee stand open? I mean, I understand, you know, you have employees and stuff, and, you know, I think a lot of stuff should have been kept open. But they locked down all these other businesses. Aaron Reznor kept her coffee stand open, and now...
All of them.
Yeah, exactly. So now come to find out, thanks to you guys, you're bringing this out to light about this illegal land deal. Why would anybody in Shasta County vote for this person?
I know, I agree with you. You know,
it is horrible.
You're right, buddy. And one other thing, too, that you brought to light, which really makes sense, hey, why would you vote? Why is she still on the council? Why hasn't something happened? And here's the other part about that really bothers me, and that is that she has put herself in a position to where she had what appears to be special privilege to keep her business open. I know that they received some money, but, you know, other people had to work, too.
Some money, $378,000.
Is that how much it was, Wynn?
Something like that, yeah. That's more than some money.
You know, and the thing is that, you know, you're right about the coffee makers. You know, when you look at this whole thing, and you're thinking about someone who is personally gaining from all of this, and again, this land deal, she knew about the land deal. The land deal, even people that are against moving the casino to the freeway area are upset about this land deal where she has her, she's up to her eyeballs in it. So, I mean, I don't know how people, you know, I would hope that people share this program. I think our archive works. I know FM doesn't, but I think I'm getting a nod from Liam. Thank you, brother. Okay, so the point is that we need to share this stuff. This is crazy.
Right. My point is that, you know, during the lockdown, she did that, and for her own interest, and then they maliciously bought that piece of property just to block, you know,
mm-hmm.
Wind River's, you know, thing.
Their access.
So, yeah, so it was illegal, you know, so I just don't see how anybody could vote for this person. So anyway, I just wanted to get that out there.
Oh, no, good points, Jimmy, and thanks for calling, brother. It's great to hear from you.
So if I could tie this into the Turtle Bay last year when the city wanted to sell Turtle Bay, they started it in the same manner. They started it in closed session. Okay, people caught wind of it, and I went to those meetings last year. I went to four or five of those meetings, and a few of them were specifically special meetings for the Turtle Bay sale. They held like four public forums strictly for that land sale. Those chambers were packed. It was standing room only. People were standing out in the foyer because that place was packed, and people were ticked off, and I was there. And I specifically told them, look, you guys just – you're doing the Brown Act stuff wrong. And so the city council makes it a habit of doing land deals at their own whim, and they're doing them incorrectly. Look what I just found yesterday, because I'm still researching a lot of these City of Reading minutes and agendas. April 7th of 2020, special meeting, City of Reading, consent items. Okay, remember, so consent.
That's yes.
Non-controversial.
Yes.
Probably no discussion.
Yes.
Consent item 4-1 Bravo. Adopt a resolution declaring 70 parcels of city-owned land as surplus. 70.
Wow.
Here it is right here, folks.
Wow.
So during a Turtle Bay deal last year, it was exposed that the city was not going through the proper surplus process mandated by the state of California. That was one of the big problems with the Turtle Bay deal. So not only are they violating the Brown Act and other things, they weren't following the state law regarding surplusing land, et cetera. And so I'm just saying these 70 parcels that were declared surplus in April of 2020, I wonder if each of those 70 parcels has gone through that proper legal process to declare surplus.
Well, I'm sure that you'll find out.
I might find out.
You know, the other thing, too, is that we keep talking about suing. Now, if the tribe is going to sue the city, isn't that our taxpayer money they're suing for, or is it money, or just is it issue or money driven?
Well, the suit is done on this particular
okay.
land sale.
Okay.
The suit's finished.
Gotcha.
Now, whether the city appeals or not, or they do a settlement, great. Obviously, that's what's going to happen now. Either the city's going to settle on this Pacella Lane, or they're going to appeal, because they can appeal, right? I don't know that they're going to appeal. I think this is a kind of a political hot potato. I don't think they'll appeal. They will likely settle. But this is where the Brown Act violations, again, I keep harping to the Brown Act violations. Somebody needs to file a Brown Act violation on this very matter.
And who can do that?
Anybody.
Okay.
It's right here in the government code recording to the Brown Act. Here it is. District attorney or any interested person may commence an action by mandamus, injunction, or declaratory relief. Anybody can file. Now, the issue with filing is a judge is always going to say, what's your standing? And I disagree with the standing. Because
I'm a sovereign citizen of the community.
Unfortunately, the Supreme Court decades and decades ago put this thing called standing in precedent.
Yeah.
And that's very unfortunate.
Yes.
Because I agree with you. As a sovereign citizen, seeing that a government agency is being unlawful, unconstitutional, whatever,
yes,
that should be your standing.
Yes.
But unfortunately...
Well, you're a taxpayer for this community. If you live in the city of Reading, they're your representatives, and they're not representing you as a taxpayer along with all your fellow citizens.
Sure. So the key is somebody needs to file a Brown Act violation on this very illegal land deal. Again, I went back to the city policy that I just talked about, mm-hmm, right? They can auction, they can do other things. They don't have to do the auction. So unfortunately, it's possible the settlement, which I think this will go settlement, the city will likely just give that piece of land to the tribe and say, all right, let's wish all this back into the cornfield, which of course none of us are going to allow. You know, we're going to keep hammering on this until we get the results we need, which is get these people out of office. So I don't know what's going to happen with this land deal, but these Brown Act violations, they need to be on the record. They have to be on legal documents. They have to be charged because of the remedies available. There's remedies available once you charge and a court finds Brown Act violations. The null and void part.
Because the court can't do anything unless somebody brings it forward.
Correct. So they can nullify and void a Brown Act violation action. They can cause future closed sessions to be recorded for review. Yeah, it's right here in the Brown Act.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
You know, we keep talking about the city, and mm-hmm, we keep talking about suing, and we keep talking about, I mean, this is our money and our representation that's at stake here. How do we hold people like Aaron Reznor and people like the other people how do we do that?
How do we hold
them accountable to where we're not out here trying to clean up their messes? How do we hold them accountable? How does that work?
Well, again, so for civil violations or criminal violations, there are statutes of limitations. And if we get Mr. Jensen in office in January,
yes,
he's going to have to probably double the staff that's there now. And half that staff's going to be going after criminal and civil violations of former government officials.
I agree.
I'm not kidding.
Well, the long arm of the law doesn't have any limitation there.
Well, there are statutes of limitations for civil or criminal violations. After so much time, you can no longer charge for them.
Right, but just because they moved to Idaho doesn't mean that they can't be tapped on the shoulder.
No, I'm talking time limitations, not geographical.
Right. I get that.
No, absolutely.
Just because they move away doesn't mean if they're in that time frame, man, they're going to be tapped on the shoulder.
Absolutely, and I'll work for that that office, and I will personally go to another state and cuff these people and bring them back. Are you kidding me? I'll be happy to do that.
Well, see, that's the problem. The problem is these people that we elect are accountable to the public, but they're not. I mean, you know, you have somebody like Reznor. Reznor's got her shops all going. Everything's going. She's an essential business. Yeah. She gets money. She basically goes out there. She knows about this land deal. She's doing, I mean, you got to be kidding me. And people like that, how do these people, it has to be getting them not only out of office, but, you know, they are costing us time, money, they're costing other people, and there's a lot more out there too.
Oh yeah.
The challenge is it's funny because, folks, I hope a lot of you haven't voted yet, and I hope a lot of you are waiting to vote. Because there's a lot of things coming out. I mean, we have a gubernatorial race, for example. I kind of wanted to hear what, all of them had to say. We got to hear most of them. We missed one today, but, yeah.
Well, the key with Reznor here, right, we have the election coming up. She's a city council person, wants to be a county supervisor, and we'll go back to this illegal land deal, which was May 19th of 2020, when it was actually – the direction was finally done to proceed with the land deal. Mr. DeCisto, also still a current city councilman, he is on record. You can go to the city council website and watch him on May 19th, 2020. Mm-hmm. He's there saying, not a good idea to do this deal, folks. I'm going to anticipate some litigation. And, again, it was also on consent item, right?
He
pulled it out of consent and said, I'm going to vote no on these two resolutions because we're going to get to
it. He is an attorney, so that's why.
And he's an attorney.
He's covering bases all the way through.
We have a caller on the line. Andrew, what say you? We've only got a couple minutes, buddy.
Yeah, I know. Hey, my wife just showed me a YouTube video of a Shasta County ballot, and I'm just going to bring out one of them. County clerk, on my ballot, Bob Holtzinger on top, Kathy Darnley on the bottom. This person who showed her ballot had that reversed. Yeah. Kathy Darnett on top, Bob Holtzinger on the bottom, which means when they're tabulated, it's scripted, if this is true. Now, I just saw this, and boy, he likes a Dominion machine.
Yeah.
You know
I'll,
that.
I'll be talking to Bob this week on that matter. Each ballot is that comes from a different precinct, they have code and bar markings, and when that particular ballot is scanned through, those code and bar markings, which are precinct specific, tells the machine how then to count each square or each fill-in dot on that particular ballot. So it's not necessarily a bad thing that the names are switched on separate ballots from different precincts, but we'll find out probably this week.
Also, you know, one of the things that we have to be looking at here, we see a lot of people on the ballot that say it's a non-partisan. However, if you have somebody who's a Democrat, somebody who's a Republican, a lot of the issues that they believe they should do or not do is predicated on what their belief system is. Kathy Darling Allen is a Democrat. She believes in the Dominion machine. Bob Holtzinger is a Republican. He doesn't believe in the Dominion machine. Kathy Darling Allen does not want voter ID. Okay, that's another Democrat belief. And and Bob Holtzinger does want it. Okay, Kathy Darling Allen loves the mail-in ballots. Bob Holtzinger would like to see people to come in and vote in person and even paper ballots. So they're diametrically opposed, one being a Democrat, Kathy Darling Allen, with all the things that we've been arguing in the general public that we don't want, yet she's been there for 20 years. And another thing, too, Rich, and I just want to hit you with this.
After
really
she was appointed there.
After she was appointed, right. Okay, the one thing I wanted to hit there, though, was the fact that, you know, we have these people who are running for office and the incumbents. So does that mean if you don't have experience or you're not an incumbent, you can't do the job? In other words, so what happens in the city clerk's office is you hand it off to the next person in line. Stephanie Bridget's going to hand it off to the next person in line. Oh, by the way, Stephanie Bridget made the comment to Eric Jensen that he was cutting in line. What does that mean? He was cutting in line. Anyway, Rich, what say you, sir?
Well, if I could finish my point on Erin Reznor, because she wants to...
Yeah, go for it.
Right? Regarding the illegal land sale. So Mr. DeCisto, he was very public stating his concerns on potential litigation for this land sale. And when he was finished, they went right into roll call vote because they were holding some... Erin was from another location because there was a coal virus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, any concerns, comments, or questions regarding what Mr. DeCisto just said? Crickets. They went right into roll call vote, and Erin Reznor voted yes to approve that consent calendar, which contained those two resolutions, which allowed that land sale to go through.
So they basically ignored what he said, didn't question anything.
No questions, no comment, no nothing. It went right into roll call vote.
So that was already predetermined.
So Erin Reznor should have said, can we please pause and delay these resolutions for the land sale so we can get more information. She did not do that. She just towed the line.
Was she the mayor at the time?
She was not. McIlvaine was. And he's complicit in this because, by the way, his name is signed on the deed. Okay? So, Tuesday, June 7th, 6 p.m., come to the city council meeting. I'm going to be alleging a felony completed during this illegal land sale.
Ruh-roh.
There's a document I'm holding in my hand. This is the felony. McIlvaine and DeWalt are the two people that signed this document.
Wow.
I'm not going to say it over the air. So, cliffhanger, folks.
Holy smoke, Batman.
Well, Rich, what we're going to do is, if you'd like, we'd like to have you come back in next week. If you can come back in for the second half hour, we have a candidate who's running, James Bradley, who's running for United States Senate, who I've talked to at length, not just a campaign manager, mm-hmm. and I don't mean that in a derogatory sort of way, but I've talked to him and at length, and he has spoken here in Reading, came to Reading and to speak. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have him on for the first half hour, but then we'd like to have you come in. You can join us even then, and we'd like to have you come in because we need to expand on this.
Yeah, I'll probably have some fresh info by next week.
Probably have some fresh info by tonight.
Fresh
probably.
I get stuff from you every hour. It's
target-rich environment.
That's right.
It is a target-rich environment.
Absolutely.
We just have to get the word out, folks. This type of corruption has to stop in Shasta County.
Yep.
This type of corruption has to stop in Reading, has to stop in California.
Yeah. Amen.
I think the city council women, the three of them that voted for this land deal, should resign immediately.
I agree.
Also the city attorney. Also, the city manager.
Yeah.
They should resign immediately. And I'm going to be demanding those resignations on that meeting on June 7th at 6. I will be demanding those resignations. And I hope there's other people that follow me or even precede me at that microphone demanding the same.
There we go.
That's it.
Well, my friend, time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.